live from the penalty box where we got five for fighting, and brought to you by Slinky. It's fun for a girl and a boy. Slinky. I'm Delmon.
And I'm Alicious.
And this is EQ2Talk. This is episode number 26, and we are recording on June 19th, 2011. Happy Father's Day. And Allie, why still don't we have theme music?
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Well, I do want to remind you, last week was our anniversary show, so your annual review is up, and this is probably going to come up on it.
I'm in trouble.
You are not going to get 5 out of 5 this year, I don't think.
Oh, well.
Hopefully, we don't eliminate your position altogether.
Uh-oh.
It's tough times here on EQ2 Talk.
So it would just be Delmon Talk.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Del Talk. All the time. Pantless, but tastefully done.
Nice.
I see this as a spinoff show. Ooh, I like this. Jot this down. We're going to use this somehow.
Yeah, I'll add this to the to-do list right after Fire Alley.
Yes, all right. So we've had a bunch of emails that have come in since our last episode. So let's get right to those, shall we?
Sure. We have a nice email from Emily Taylor, also known as Domino. Dear Allie and Delmon, I listened to episode 25 of EQ2 Talk this weekend and was glad to hear Allie sounding a little more cheerful than the previous podcast. I actually listened to the podcast while out rollerblading. I used to listen to the comedy news show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, but sometimes I can't help laughing out loud, and the local joggers look kind of alarmed when someone goes zooming past them on rollerblades laughing uncontrollably. So for what it's worth, your podcast is also making the lives of San Diego joggers a calmer and less alarming experience. Anyway, I listened to your reply to Sprouse's question about the Trade Skill questline that comes after Steamfont, where you suggested consulting some of the EQ2 fan sites that have Trade Skill timelines written up. This will definitely help Sprouse. But I wanted to mention there's a much easier in-game answer, too. In the quest journal, we have the storyline tab, and every trade skill quest line is listed there. As you become eligible for the new trade skill quests, you should see them appear in your storyline window. All the trade skill storylines begin with the word crafting, so they're easy to find. So now you know, in case you didn't already, although, of course, the websites are very useful references also. For what it's worth, the actual answer is that at level 40, there's another trade skill questline in Lava Storm from a Kara called Perla. If you haven't already found her in Lava Storm, when you're a level 40 trade skiller, she will also appear in each of the 6 player cities' main trade skill societies and ask you to meet her there and help. Also, Allie will be happy to know that the preserved arm wrapping does in fact exist, so she just needs to keep picking up those shinies. I'm pretty sure I found them myself in both Living Tombs and Silent City. Keep up the good work and hope to see you at Fanfare. Signed, Emily. So, Del, did you have any thoughts?
I did. I am very disappointed in this email.
It's the first paragraph,
isn't it? It is the very first paragraph. Is she implying, in not so many words, that she's not finding us funny?
I think she is. We're not funny.
We're not funny.
We're not funny enough to laugh out loud at.
How am I not funny? Do I not amuse her? Do I not make her chuckle? Am I not ha-ha funny to her? I'm upset by this. I'm hurt.
Maybe you're just not laugh out loud funny, Del.
I'm merely a little snicker.
You're a chuckle. You're an internal chuckle.
I'm a little tee-hee-hee.
Yes, perhaps.
Well, I'm hurt, though.
Hey, the joggers are safe.
I guess that's true. If anything, if there's a silver lining to all this, people don't think that Domino is as weird as she is. But she makes some great comments to questions that Sprouts had asked that we read during our last show. And I'll admit, I had forgotten about the storylines tab in the quest journal.
Yeah, me too.
Mainly because I don't go there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a subtle hint to why I didn't think of it. There is one thing that does bother me about the storyline tab is that repeatables keep going back in there. So even after you've done that story and it's a repeatable quest, it pops back in there. So I'm never able to clear all that out. It especially happens with a lot of the crafting stuff.
I would guess that it doesn't happen anymore. That's just a guess, and I have no evidence, but I have a feeling that might have changed because they changed something recently where repeatable quests that you take again don't disappear from your completed journal. And I have a funny feeling that the Storylines tab is getting its information from the completed journal.
Okay, maybe.
I don't know. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. It's been known to happen.
I'm willing to check that when I go back in game next time. I'm going to do a repeatable, get it so that it goes to the, I think it goes to the closed book format icon when you're done with it, and see if then at some point it goes back to needing to be done again according to the storyline. I did enjoy that addition to the game. I did use it. I have used it on alts, and I don't necessarily use it on Delmon as much, I don't think, because I'm doing all the quests anyways. But I think for my alts, it's a good way to help remind me of things that are going on that I could be working on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it's another one of those features that they added, but it came in a little too late, and people are just not accustomed to using it all that much.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's just us being veteran players.
I think it's just us being veteran players.
Okay. Maybe somewhere like on EQ2X where a lot of new players are coming in, they might be getting a lot more benefit and value add out of it.
Yeah. What about the Lava Storm quest line?
I did them, but I didn't do them in Lava Storm because, again, I think when those came in, I was probably max level trade skiller. I think I remember this Karen in town. And getting it there and doing it for my trade skill society there.
I don't remember this at all. So I might have to go back and look.
Okay. I think I did it. But now you've got me questioning. So I should have checked this beforehand. Dang it.
Oh, well.
And I guess you'll be happy to know that your missing shiny is still out there.
Yes, I am also unhappy because that just means that I have crappy luck. But
right.
I am glad that it's there. It does exist. I just have to go look.
Because I guess if it wasn't there, then you would feel vindicated that you could say it was bugged and get up on your high hobby horse, rant and rave about how it's not all there. But like you say, it just sounds like junk luck.
Yes. I just need to be more persistent.
Although I did come really close for you the other day, didn't I? I was turning in some poo, some bones, and some water to the herbalist in the guild hall, and what did I get, like the foot wrapping or something?
Yes.
Or elbow, I forget which exactly. I was all excited, I saw it, I immediately linked it to you, and you said wrong one.
Right, arm.
Arm, maybe that's what,
yeah. Yeah. Although I did get two TSO shinies that I needed from the herbalist.
Ah, very good.
I turned in, I think, like 10, and I got two of 10. Well, that's pretty good, considering I don't need very many shinies.
Yeah, I did the same thing recently. I think I tinkled through about 50 of them, and I was 0 for 50.
Wow.
I guess that goes to show how few shinies I really need.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of depressing. They all wound up on the broker, so folks out there are getting some cheap shiny prices on Unrest right now, what's left of them.
What really stinks when you use the Bernai or whatever and you get a, you know, spotted yellow
moth.
Butterfly or something like that. Like, oh, really? No.
Yeah, exactly. Those are huge bummers when you're getting, like, tier one from, like, Oak Mist Forest junk.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you. Because everybody's got all that stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so thank you to Domino for that email.
Even though you're not laughing out loud.
I'm not laughing at her. No. Or no, she's not laughing at me. Whatever.
Or with you.
Somebody's not laughing. That's for darn sure. All right.
We need to add more slapstick, maybe.
More shtick?
More shtick.
That's what she said. All right. Next email is from, who wrote this one?
Sprouts.
Oh, my buddy Sprouts.
Mm.
Mm. Yes. All right. What does Sprouts have to say this week? He says his subject is making stuffs and hiding from Burnspear. All right, I broke down and looked up a timeline for trade skill quests. I was happy to find a couple I missed, including the gathering quest in the Island of Mara. I really wish I had started that right from the beginning, and dang, that gathering quest pays well. Going back to your comments that writs are the fastest way to level, I agree. But I enjoy the challenge of the trade skill quests. It's quite rewarding sneaking around reds and figuring out the right way to do the quest so that you avoid the reds. It's not the fastest way to level, though. Most would say I'm playing the game wrong anyways. Out of my 8 characters over 2 accounts, I finally cut 2 loose to be crafting only. But I still have 6 I'm working adventuring and trade skilling on. Basically switching when one couple gets down to 70-ish vitality. Most are now in the 30s, both adventuring and trade skilling. Sprouts, my tailor, just hit 40, which was very exciting for me, and she is nearly 39 adventuring. I think the consensus is that you should work one character and trade skill up to 90, then go back for the rest. Since you've both been around for a long time, what do you two feel the advantage and disadvantages of leveling one character versus leveling up a group of characters are? A couple more questions. Do you think they will ever let you obtain trade skill race traits without leveling up adventuring? Why does Burnspear always hog a bunch of harvesting nodes to himself? The upcoming mounts, prestige homes, good and evil city updates, and possible crossover servant groups are really cool. What is the veteran view? To wrap it up, I'm very excited to see where EQ2 goes from here. Hope you all have a good time at Fanfare. Signing off, Sprouts the Swashy Taylor. And he also lists all his other alts here. And I'm not going to read them all, but I will read one, of course. Mega Anus, the Zerker Weaponsmith. And before we go any further, I just want to comment quickly or ask a question to you, Allie. Mega Anus, the Zerker Weaponsmith.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that was done intentionally because Delmon's a Weaponsmith as well? Hence, that character got that name?
I think it had nothing to do with you.
Okay.
Because I think he existed before he knew who you were.
So you're saying there was a Mega Anus out there before me?
Well.
Come on, that was funny. She okay. better be laughing now. That's all I have to say. Sorry. She better be laughing after that one.
Let's just say I think the joggers are pretty safe.
No.
So I did have some thoughts about Sprouts' email.
Okay.
Going back to the beginning, the Gathering Obsession quest line, I totally agree. It's awesome. And I think they tried to drive people there with the little thing in the mail that you get the first time you harvest something. You know, it makes you go there, which I think is really fantastic because that quest line, I absolutely love it. I'm working on my 7th and 8th Harvester Cloak, the 2 most recent alts that I've been working on. And I just can't get enough of it because it's like the name says it all. The Gathering Obsession. It's like once you start, it's just so hard to stop harvesting. Love it.
And as he says, it does pay out very well. So if you're a low-level toon and you're doing that, you're getting tons of trade skill experience, which can rocket you way up.
Well, I don't even really do it for the trade skill XP. I just do it because I like harvesting.
And I do like that change with the mail that you get to tell you to go and do it so that you are potentially harvesting in the area where you might be adventuring already if you're kind of doing them at the same time.
Yeah.
So that you don't have to, as he had to, go back and spend a lot of time in lower tier gray zones just running around looking for rocks or wood or fish or whatever.
Yeah, and now with the changes to harvesting, with that little potion that you get in the mail, it's like no time at all to harvest. It's so fast. It's awesome.
I have to say, I just got my potion last night, I think, actually. I think since that went in, last night was the first time I actually clicked on a harvesting note.
Yeah. I wish there were more of those. I wish there were more of those. And I bet if they put them on the marketplace, people would buy them.
Let's get to the crux of his email,
mm-hmm.
where I like how he phrased it, playing the game the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the real simple and over-exaggerated answer to that is there is no wrong way to play.
Right.
It's all what's fun for you. So, but I agree a lot of the experts who have podcasts like to say how to do things right and wrong. But again, it's only our take on it or our experience, much like doing the trade skill writs. We both agreed that that's the fastest way because we have guilds with depots. We have Pack Pony. We are high level. We've done all those quests already on main characters. So for us, it's the end is greater than the means to get there.
Yeah, I think you're right. What about his question about advantages and disadvantages of leveling up one character versus a group of characters?
For me, I think, again, it's about right now getting to the end. So when you have a max level character, you are getting that veteran bonus of XP boost. So I would say if you're looking to get to end game, then yes, get one completely there as fast as possible. Start getting the bonus for the next one and the next one. However, the counter argument could be made to that of, well, I've played this guy for a little while and I want to do something different. I've been playing my assassin for so much and now I want to play my necro. Well, you got to kind of do what's ever fun there for you. However, if you want to get to the end so you can get those bonuses so you can start getting them applied to the next character, then really the best way is to just get one guy to 90 as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I can see that. So for me, I have a level 90. I have two accounts and I have a level 90 on each. And so the alts, I kind of play them in pairs. So when one set of alts runs out of vitality, I can just switch to the next couple. So that's kind of what I've been doing lately.
Yeah, so I think this kind of comes down to the very high-level answer. You got to kind of do what's fun for you and what your goal is. If your goal is to get characters to the end, then yes, get one up, and then you'll get the bonus and get to the next. But do whatever is fun. I would suggest, though, for players who are leveling to keep their harvesting within the tier where they're adventuring, because a lot of times along the way, you will bump into what I guess would be classified as adventure quests, and I guess I'm putting that in air quotes, adventure quests that require some level of harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have to do on your own. At least if it's a trade skilling quest, you could maybe get commissioned or something like that. So I would say really try to keep your harvesting, and using the gathering obsession quest in line with that is a good way of doing that. I can think on many occasions when I had alts that I was leveling, and I think specifically like in Everfrost, all of a sudden you get to one where the fellow wants you to fish some stuff. And I'm like, my fishing is like 5. I gotta go all the way back to tier 1.
But that happened to everybody, though.
It did. To do a tier 5 quest. So if I had done my fishing along the way through each tier as I'd moved up, I would have been spending that time, you know, while I was doing it. Hey, every time I saw a fish node, let me grab that fish node and harvest it up now and get my skill ups, as opposed to having to go back and maybe do the drudgery of having to do 5 tiers worth of fishing all at once.
It's not that bad, especially if your swimming skill's not all the way up either. Or, although that's not really a problem these days. It used to be.
Although, as we say with a lot of things in game, there's never enough fishing nodes when you need them.
Of course.
So when you're trying to grind out 5 tiers of fishing, where the heck are all the fish?
Yeah.
It's when you least need them, there's plentiful of them around. Why is there always roots when I need rocks?
Right.
Or vice versa.
So really quick, do you want to do quick answers to his last 3 questions there?
Absolutely.
Do you think they will ever let you get the trade skill race traits without leveling up adventuring?
Yes, I think they will, and I think they should. We don't today, but I think that's something that the team should look at.
My answer was maybe, but probably never.
I think they should.
I think they should, too.
Whether or not they do, yet to be seen.
Yeah. Why does Burnspear always have to hog a bunch of harvesting nodes to himself?
Because that's the function of named mobs that you're unable to kill. They're always on top of the shiny or node that you need. Oh, that is their function.
So my answer to that would be just kill him. Bring out an alt that needs AA, mentor down, go kill him, and then put your alt back there to harvest.
Yeah, but what if Sprout and Mega Anus aren't powerful enough?
To kill Burnspear?
Yeah, maybe he's like level 19 and Burnspear's like in his 30s or something.
He's got somebody.
All right.
He's got somebody that can kill him. And if not, then you shout. and you say, hey, can somebody kill Burnsbear? He's hogging my node.
Then they take your node.
So the third question he poses about, just real quick, upcoming mounts, prestige houses, Good and Evil City updates, possible crossover grouping. Very cool. What's the veteran view?
The veteran view for me is very excited about cross-server grouping. I think that is something that the game and the players really need and will go a long way in increasing enjoyment of the game. Good and Evil updates, yet to be seen, but I think it's a good thing.
I am the other way around. I am on the fence about crossover grouping. Not sure how it's going to play out, but I'm trying to keep an open mind, see what happens. I just have this funny feeling it's going to turn out like the Battlegrounds a bit. Anonymous. I don't know. Not sure yet. Leaving the decision until later. Good and Evil City updates. Very, very excited. Can't wait to see what they do. Very excited about Evil, especially.
Oh. Well, before we leave it, though, the cross-server grouping, I think what excites me the most about that is having more opportunity.
I can see that.
Right now, like, I'm stuck on Umbral Halls. I need to go back in there for an umpteen thousandth time, it seems, to get more mirror quests. And it seems very hard to get groups to want to go and do some of that content. I'm hoping if the cross-server LFG functionality will allow me to choose what instances I want to sign up for and pair me up a little bit better. I'm excited by that. The opportunity to be able to do more. Right now I'm limited by the walls of the Unrest server. I can't get off them, and I can't get help from anybody else out there. I'm thinking there are other players on other servers who want to do those quests too. So if I can just queue up and get in there, and I've admitted I'll group with Satan himself to get a quest update. I'm not afraid to admit that.
Yeah.
So I think more opportunity is a good thing. Now, I'm certainly going to believe that we're going to see the super suck bag players that are out there, if I can say that. We're going to find them, and they're going to be in my groups, and I'm going to be pulling my hair out, and probably somebody's going to be saying the same thing about me at some point, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more often than not, you'll get into a good group like that that'll help you get something you need, especially when it comes to a quest drop or an update or something like that. That's what I guess I'm most excited for it for.
Well, like I said, jury's still out. We'll wait and see what happens.
What about leapers and gliders?
What?
The leapers and gliders that are coming that Smokejumper announced at E3.
Oh, I don't know. I have been paying no attention.
Okay.
Sorry. It just went by me. I guess I don't really care about mounts.
I think it's a good thing because for the lower level players, it has some value to them. They can't fly today, but they get semi-flight, early flight, much like, man, when we first pushed the thing off at Kitty Hawk, it kind of glided. It really didn't fly, right?
Okay.
But then we got a little bit better at it. Now we're flying, we're zooming around in jumbo jets and griffins. So I think it's good because to me, it fits a little bit of the story that, you know, level one shouldn't be ready to fly. I think they do need a little bit limitation, but they're still going to get some form of it.
So was this sort of their way to give new players, because there was that one thread about, that was a long time ago, I guess now, about new players wanting mounts and flying mounts. And, you know, if I can't fly, basically, why would I bother playing this game? Do you think that's an answer to that?
I really do.
Sort of an interim thing and a way to give new players something and give them something exciting to do, to have, without giving away the farm.
Absolutely. I don't think it was necessarily a knee-jerk reaction to that particular thread topic. I'm sure the team is smart enough to know that was coming, that discussion was coming at some point. And I think what the solution they came up with fits that, and it fits a story to it. It makes sense to me a little bit that in the beginning you can leap. You learn to jump before you learn how to fly or glide and run and all that sort of stuff. It's a progression. So you start out with something, and then it gets a little bit better, and it gets a little bit better along the way. So I think it fits in there perfectly. The screenshot or two that I have seen of them, they look really cool. Reminds me of that thing out of the Star Wars that Obi-Wan rode around on that was screeching. And I'm excited by it. I think it's cool, and I think it's going to help ease some of that low level, I want to fly, but the game has limited me to being able to fly at a higher level. So I think it's a good thing.
Okay. Our third email is from Ukubi. Ukubi writes, happy anniversary. Just wanted to send a note to say happy anniversary and that I'm enjoying the podcast more than ever. I recently went back and listened to some of the first ones and laughed my way through a lot of unplanned travel miles. Thank you so much for taking the time to do these. You hear that, Domino? Ukubi's laughing.
Yeah. I think Domino has no sense of humor. I think that's her problem.
What you talked about in your latest podcast really hit home for me about the negative people in chat. Things have been in a bit of a lull lately with guildmates on vacation or just unavailable. And I was tiring of doing the same daily faction quests every day. With that, and with some of the cranky pants people in chat, I was about to take a break from the game. Instead, I remembered what you had said about your noob characters and looking at the game through new eyes, and I decided to turn off chat for a while, mentor down, and see what would happen. As a side note, I'm a fairly new player, less than 2 years, so while I am level 90, I missed a lot of content, just because the game has so much for you to do that you can level right past some areas without even trying. I mentored down to the Ferrat level, headed out, and had a blast. Granted, I wasn't having as much trouble with mobs as a quote-unquote real level 45 or so player, and I did keep my Griffin, but tried to only use it when I would get completely lost, and I enjoyed it a lot. I finished several collections, got an achievement or two, and the break from Velius, as much as I love it, turned out to be a very good thing. I would recommend this to any player who's getting bored with current events. Head back in time and find something that you either missed or forgot. Sort of an advantage to being old and forgetful. You get to have new experiences all the time. Keep up the good work, signed Ukubi. What'd you think there, Del?
I think that's a great idea, and it's something we've talked about. When things get you down, try looking at it from a different angle. And she went out to your favorite zone, the Ferrat, which I find kind of interesting.
Yeah, I've been hanging out there a lot lately. It's fun.
And I think it gives you a break, a bit of vacation. I think folks still enjoy the game, but sometimes you're right. You're tired of all the level chat. You're tired of looking for a group or trying to get a quest update. Well, step away, do something else. Pick a class like we've done in the past that you're maybe not very familiar with and want to give a try. Say something you've never played, if there's a particular archetype or something. You've never had a wizard or a mage or anything like that. Give that a shot for a little bit. I think it helps reinvigorate you as a player to want to come back and get going again. Because you're right, some of those faction quests, I've killed the same 6 crabs and lured out the same 4 eels, I think, a gazillion times now.
Yeah, and the other thing is, if you start a new character just to play around with, if you pick something that, say, you're totally unfamiliar with, it actually gives you a greater appreciation for people who play that class. I know for me, whenever I switch to a healer and I actually try and heal a group, I have done that in the past with guild groups on a low B tune. I really gain a greater appreciation for the healer, or playing a mage, a greater appreciation for the mage who can actually stay alive and still manage to DPS. I think just getting out of your normal mode can change your point of view in many ways.
And absolutely. And if you're, say, tired of EQ2 talk, go back and listen to some of our original shows. Those will be eye-opening. And it's true, we've come a long way in a year. Okay. I'd like to think for the better, right?
Well, we couldn't get any worse.
That is true. That is very true. See, now that was funny.
We're already not funny.
Oh, that's...
We couldn't get any worse.
We couldn't be getting more unfunny than we already are. It's not funny, not one bit. All right. Thank you, Ukubi, for that email, and we hope to hear from you again soon, along with Sprouts and our other emailer there.
Oh, poor Domino.
So we were doing something a couple episodes ago. We kind of shied away from it a little bit. We were going to talk about things we wish we knew when we were young.
When we were young. Sounds like a song.
I'll have to find something to insert there.
Don't insert too many things.
I won't.
Crap! That was a total outtake. Damn it. I'm just feeding them to you. This is terrible.
So, Allie, what was something that you wish you had known before?
Well, this is actually something I did know because I was around when they first came out. But every now and then I'm reminded of this being something that maybe new players have no clue what it is. If you're wandering about and you see those little rainbows, you're probably wondering what they are if you don't know. We used to call them Skittles because they're, you know, a rainbow of colors. The things that you buy the scrying stones from the two vendors in Thundering Steps and Neck Forest Docks, and you can scry for goodies, for junk, or big prizes. I was addicted to those things for a while.
I was too, because there were quest starters that came from those. And I think there is one out there that I am still missing.
Really?
And I have, yes, and I have scryed till my scries have fallen out.
I think you need to look at your list and make sure there's actually still one, and then make a concerted effort to go get it. Just buy like a bag full of scrying stones and go for it. Go get it.
The challenge, though, being is those rainbows, those Skittle rainbows that you refer to, are only in certain zones, like Zach Thunder, right? Steps, Neck Forest, like old content zones.
So?
And when I'm running around looking for Skittles, there's nothing else to do but run around looking for Skittles.
So play an alt.
I guess. And then when I see a Skittle, switch over?
No, don't switch over. Just, they're tradable.
Oh, they are? Oh,
the okay. Books? Yeah, you can sell them on the broker.
Oh, all right. I did not know that. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And you can also look them up on the broker if you're feeling lazy and not in the mood to scry.
And wealthy enough to afford them.
Right.
Although I would guess, this is my guess, people probably don't scry too often.
I bet they don't.
And even if they did, they probably wouldn't know what it was and might just throw it up there cheap anyways. That's a guess.
You know, if they added some like crazy, ridiculous things to the scrying, to the Skittles or the rainbows or whatever you call them, if they added something to the loot table that was like an Easter egg type of thing, that was, you know, some silly hat, some appearance thing, I bet you anything people would be scrying.
That is very true. Or I was thinking even like a title, right?
Yeah.
The Scrying Master, the Scrying Game or something, right?
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Something that's not going to, you don't want to put loot on there because then itemization becomes an issue and yada, yada.
You know what I want? I want a feather hat like the show Vegas Showgirls. I want a feather hat. Crazy feathers sticking out. Oh, come on. That would be so awesome.
Or what about, you know what they could do?
What?
They could put LON loot cards out there too, or something like that. You know, something like choose your loot card or something.
Nah.
All right. You just want the feather boa.
Not a boa. A hat.
Is there a difference?
A boa goes around your neck. It's like a scarf.
Okay.
I want the Vegas showgirl hat.
That just doesn't seem like to be the thing you should be wearing on a raid. Hey, dragon, look at me with the giant thing sticking out of my head. I'm wearing a peacock. Kill me first.
I think that's the absolute thing you should wear on a raid. Either that or dress up like a turkey.
Okay.
Raiding in costume is fun, Del. You should try it sometime. You should.
Maybe I shall.
You should definitely. Go in turkey form. See if anyone notices.
Probably not.
So what about you, Del? Was there something you wish you knew?
Yes, there was. Although I have to say I knew this, but didn't know it, if that makes sense. Or I knew it, but I didn't remember it type of thing. So that's what I put down for this week. It's the Butcher Block dock merchants sell the recipe books for transmuters for fragments, powders, infusions, manas, and swapping between those. I have been recently adorning a lot of my gear now that I'm getting decked out in almost a complete set of easy mode tier 1 DOV rating gear. So I've been putting a lot of the fabled adornments on there for myself, the whites specifically, they're called superior, not fabled, excuse me, superior, where I need the manas to make those, but I've been tinkling through a lot of manas, and I couldn't remember how you converted infusions into manas and all that sort of stuff, and then I asked for help, and someone reminded me where to go and look, and sure enough, that's where it really was. So that's something I had remembered. I'm not sure if a lot of people know about that. But it's out there if you need to be able to swap between those components.
Someone reminded you?
Yes.
Why, who would that be?
I believe that was it Domino? Maybe Ukabi. Maybe I was talking to Sprouts. No?
And what was that? This person was right?
This person pointed me in the correct direction, yes.
And it was true, and it was correct.
Their information was of value, correct.
It was me, Del.
Oh, was it you?
Yes, it was me.
Well, then it's even more shocking that it was correct. See, now that was funny.
I don't think that was funny.
No, I don't think you would find that funny. I find it funny.
Of course you do.
I bet Mega Anus thinks it's funny.
Oh, poor Sprouts.
Poor Sprouts. He should have never given us that name.
No.
So something else we wanted to talk about during this episode of EQ2 Talk was something that I have been struggling with. And I've talked to Allie about it, and we bantered back and forth. And what that is smart loot. And for folks that are maybe not up on all the lingo, smart loot is some form, and it can come in many, many forms and varieties and variations of loot that's just not randomly assigned. That it understands what characters have, what gear they're maybe already wearing or possess, and modifies the loot tables such that the reward is something that is of value to the people who are present. Does that make sense, Allie?
It does.
Okay. So something that I've been encountering a lot in my DOV rating right now is we've been doing the same three key zones over and over again, Kratox, Legends, and Storms or Throne there. What we have is a raid force that is progression-oriented. We're interested in killing something, getting the reward, gearing up from it so that we can move on to the next kill and get better as we go along. But what we seem to be facing is a problem in DOV where everything is so regimented that it doesn't match our raid force's makeup. So what I mean by that is in DOV they have classified the drops as two archetypes. You have your fighter archetype, your mage, your priest, and your scouts. And each one of those drops, those patterns that drop, are dropping on 25% ratio, which makes sense. There are four of them, so they're equally divvied up, one in a four chance of anything dropping. The problem that I'm seeing, though, is that on our raiding force, at least I think we are a typical raid force, that we don't carry 25% of each of those archetypes. We don't have 25% red classes, 25% green, 25% yellow, and 25% blue. We're carrying much smaller, especially in the fighter arena. We may only have on some nights two and at most four fighters on. But when we kill a mob, that mob has a 25% chance to drop loot for those fighters. So what's happened is we have killed the same mobs in, say, Kratox over and over and over again. We have created quite the abundance of fighter loot. And our players who are playing fighters as their mains have already been geared up. However, because we are maybe carrying twice as many healers, there are healers who are still waiting for potential drops, even though other classes have completely maxed out on gear. And I think that is a problem with the random loot system, is that the loot is randomly and evenly dispersed. However, the classes of players are not evenly distributed 25% into each archetype. Are you following me here, Allie?
I am following you.
Okay,
but
okay.
To me, it sounds like you're crying about loot.
Am I whining about loot? I think I might be. But I don't think I'm alone.
I'm just giving you crap. Go ahead.
Fair enough.
Sorry. I couldn't resist. QQ a little more, Adele.
Okay, I will. Hold on. Let me get an extra soapbox out here so I can stand even higher on it. But I think what we're seeing, though, is in this, how shall I phrase this? This kinder, gentler, this world without placeholders, world without camping of mobs, this more friendly, more accessible world of Norrath that we have today, we need, I think, some form of smart loot to reward players who have been unrewarded and potentially who are present. And now maybe the case I'm making for the argument I'm making is for rating, but I think it's just as bad in the heroic scenario. How often have you gone into a heroic zone doing an instance, and it might be the hot zone, so you're have a greater chance of exquisite chests, and an exquisite drops. You're all excited, aren't you? You're all jazzed about it. You see it, you're like fist pumping, yes. You pop the damn thing open, and there's a master for a necro. And there is not a single necro in your group.
That happens often, and sometimes if you're in a zone that happens to be a hot zone, or you just get lucky, there's more than one master chest dropping, and you can get through three or four chests and find nothing that anyone needed or wanted, even for an alt.
So do you think that's unfair, though? Do you think the game should be rewarding for people who are present, who participated in the kill, and not, in the case of a master, a 1 in 24 chance?
Well, I see your point, and I think that this could be like a really long discussion, because there are some pluses and minuses to every scenario, and I think you can take the concept of smart loot to the extreme to find the negatives. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And the lack of smart loot to the extreme to find the positives. And there's got to be some middle ground. I think there should be some middle ground. I don't want to see, and I'll explain, I don't want to see smart loot in every zone 100% of the time. Because if you can get everything guaranteed by going in with exactly what you want to, you know, to force something to drop, I think there are ways that people have of manipulating the mechanics of the game to get what they want. And people are smart. People figure out how to manipulate a zone. I remember with, what's the name of that? Times two in Lava Storm.
Ward of Elements.
Ward of Elements, sorry. That was a smart zone, a smart loot zone, wasn't it? For certain pieces.
Okay.
Right? The armor pieces. I don't think the jewelry was smart loot. But the smart loot was set when you zone in. It's not, I think that's how it was. It seemed to be. That was the theory anyway. The smart loot was set when you zone in. So if you zone in and then somebody switches tunes, I think you have to, everybody zone out, you know, give it a few minutes to let it sort of reset.
Okay.
And then zone back in order to get, say you switched out a dirge for a brigand or something, and the brigand or the dirge went home. We had to go.
Sure.
For the night. And the brigand stepped in. You're not going to get you're going to get something that would appeal to the dirge more so than the brigand, unless you zone out, let the thing reset, give it a little bit of time and come back in. That was the theory anyway at the time. But I think people are smart to be able to figure out how to manipulate it to get what they want. So I'm kind of on the fence on that, because I don't know that that's the best way to do it. Like, in an ideal world, I think it would be great if we could all have smart loot that was like, I don't know, maybe 75% smart, okay. 50% smart, so that it's not a guarantee of success, or not a guarantee of 100% of the time getting something somebody can use. Because if it's really smart loot and it really looks at what you have as opposed to what classes you have in terms of what gear you're already wearing, right? So say I've been to Ward of Elements 100 times and the guy next to me has been 3 times. He's going to need more loot. The loot will be in his favor. I don't think that's a good thing either.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if he needs all 7 pieces and I only need 1 ring, I'm not going to get anything.
Okay.
So if it were like a percentage, if you didn't take into account what people are wearing, that might be a little more fair. But on the negative side of that, that's sort of annoying if the same bracers keep dropping over and over again and everybody already has the bracers.
Exactly.
I don't know. So I'm on the fence, like I said.
And I think, too, you know, we toss around the term smart loot. I think there are, like a lot of things in life, there's a spectrum here. On one end, we have genius loot, right? And so on the other end, we have, well, it's smart enough not to push the pull door loot.
Smarter than the average bear loot.
And then in the middle, yeah, smarter than the average bear loot. Or semi-intelligent loot. Or Mensa loot. Or, you know, it wasn't random, but kind of luckier than good loot. You know, so there's a spectrum in there. And I think you're right. You can have all those degrees. I mean, today it is truly random. So there's nothing out there other than the cast of a die to tell you what's going to happen. When you have an uneven player population, and I think that's where I'm coming from, where your player population is uneven, it's still as implying evenly distributed loot rules. And I think maybe we need to move a little bit away from that. So, like you say, so maybe we have a semi-smart loot system that only, you know, for lack of better terms, 50% of the time is it really smart, and the other 50% of the time it's truly random.
Yeah.
Or to look at the, not necessarily everybody's slot and figure out what they have, but maybe instead of the bracers dropping 25% for fighters, 25% for mages, 25% for scouts, it looks up the colors in the raid window or the group window and says, gee, I've got twice as many healers as I do fighters. Well, then the percentages are weighted that bracer that might drop will be twice as better for healers than it would be for fighters, to try to normalize that curve out a little bit.
So just playing devil's advocate here for a minute.
Absolutely.
If in the smart loot world versus the non-smart loot world, okay, I think we're having this conversation now. You could have this conversation 6 years ago and have a completely different answer. And what I mean by that is it seems like, for me anyway, having this conversation, I'm thinking also in terms of the longevity of the game and the retention of players.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to think of, like, if you had a change, what would this do to the longevity of the game? What would this do to players who play now? Will they get bored faster? Will they get frustrated and or create some situation that makes them quit or stop playing? I don't want any change that is going to make people stop playing.
Absolutely. And I 101% agree with that. And I would say I don't know, but I think I have a couple of comments about it.
Okay.
So the system we have today with being completely random forces a high degree of replayability. I, as Delmont, have to keep running, and we'll just keep picking on Kratox as his own, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have to keep running Kratox to gear up myself and to gear up all of my buddies in my raid party. So if every time I go in there and that bracer, we like that bracer because I think that's the first drop maybe, right? Mm-hmm. That bracer, that always happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have twice as many healers, so if it's going to take us that much longer to gear them all up. So it increases my replayability of that, or kind of maybe forced replayability. We have to keep going to get everybody equal, on equal footing for gear. We got to keep doing those same encounters over and over again, which is good for the longevity of the game in that it keeps players playing it. But I think at some point they get tired of the treadmill effect, maybe. Kratox again mode, right? Not because we can't go ahead. It's because we have to get everybody up to speed, and it's taking us so long because we have so many more of one particular archetype than the other. I think, too, we're having this discussion in the DOV frame, at least, a little bit maybe more, at least I'm thinking about it a little bit more, because they have really forced us into these archetype scenarios where our primary stats are one or the other, right?
Yeah.
So in DOV loot itemization, it's all I care about as a healer is wisdom. I don't look at something, well, gee, that has a lot of intelligence, and intelligence used to affect my crit mit, as it did before. Maybe I do want to go high intelligence, and I'll take the hit on low wisdom, because I still need all that stuff. Or I still need strength so I can carry around these strong boxes full of loot. Well, now I don't need that anymore because there's no more encumbrance. That's all gone. So to some degree, the game design has forced us down this path of, I know that's better. It's the next mob up from in the order of progression. It's all tiered, more so than it ever was before. So I know that at this tier, what I can kill in EQ2, this is the best thing I can get. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. This is, it's wisdom. It's got a focus effect for me. It's best for me. There is nothing else that somebody could say, well, you might want to consider this. So I'm forced into choosing that path because that is what is the best. It's perfectly designed for me. There's nothing I have to trade off when I get that. There's nothing I'm losing to say, well, gee, that one had higher resists, but this one had higher wisdom. We don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. Itemization has become so narrowed, it's focusing to say, that's it. That's the only thing you want at this point in the game. For what your group can kill, this is what you want. And I think, too, that's why people are so enamored with PQs, because that's the best that they can get for the little amount of work that they have to do to get it. So because this itemization has been so narrowly focused and consolidated with resists and bonuses and a focus effects and all that, there's only one thing to get. So why not just give it to me smartly? Because there's no choice.
But I would say don't give it to you smartly because how many – you raid, what, 3 times a week? Your guild raids 4 times a week?
Yeah.
If you raid smartly or loot smartly, you are going to be done. Done in no time, right?
That is the trade-off, yes. I reduce my replayability of it.
That bothers me because high-level raid players are going to just get bored. When you get to the end, you've won the EQ, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it kind of scares me a little bit. No, I mean, that's a way oversimplified way of putting it.
Absolutely.
Obviously, only the helmet only drops off of such and such mob, right? The chest only drops off such and such mob. So you have to be able to tackle those mobs to get those pieces. Mm-hmm. Okay, so obviously I'm oversimplifying, but it scares me when high-end raiders get bored because as falls Wichita, so falls Wichita Falls, kind of. When those people leave, the next tier down will leave, et cetera, et cetera. Nyeh. Scares me.
Right, but the other side of that coin is that treadmilling effect. If I have to kill that mob one more time because, you know, and I'm being facetious a little bit.
You will order more counts because of it.
I wonder about that at sometimes. I used to say that about a lot of things, but I wonder about that.
I think you'll look back fondly. But I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm sounding more like I'm not in favor of smart loot. I'm in favor of semi-smart loot or smart loot a percentage of the time. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And I would say I advocate that as well. I don't want genius loot.
Right.
I absolutely don't want genius loot.
Right.
But I don't want dumb loot.
Yes, right.
I think it needs to be some form of semi-intelligence or some form of an artificial intelligence in there.
Not too smart. People will get bored and people will stop going.
Exactly. And I think too, one of the greatest fumbles of this, and this goes way back. Back in very early days of EQ1, you killed a mob. He may or may not have loot on him for you. In today's world, when I raid Kratox and I kill Kratok himself, I know that he's going to drop feet and he's going to drop a charm slot. He's going to do that every time. And he's going to drop a head every time.
Doesn't that lose some appeal? I mean, isn't the excitement factor not there because it's always the same? You always know what's coming.
It is. So that's what I'm saying. Back in the DOF days, the Desert of Flames days, or the original content days, you could open up that chest and you there weren't always feet in there, and there weren't always the charm slot in there. So there wasn't the earpiece all the time. So there was some like excitement about opening it. Right now, we open the chest and I'm like, okay, this guy's got feet and he's got this. I checked off my list. There's nothing that this mob can get me riled up about. except for hopefully one of the last few Templar masters I might need. Other than that, I'm just killing this mob for killing its sake in the hopes that somebody else here will need it. Right? There'll be an item there that they need. So I think it's taken some of the rush of opening the Exquisite out of the equation, knowing that it's always going to be the same stuff all the time. So to some degree, I guess I'm looking for a little bit more excitement and randomness to it, but not so much that we're just killing it in the hopes of getting something that a very small population needs, but is weighted evenly across the entire population. Am I making sense or am I just rambling at this point?
No, you're making sense.
Okay. I think, too, because a lot of these classes, you know, we play them not necessarily based on desirability, but by need.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, we have so many mana regeners. We have bards are very popular. And, you know, I think, you know, Allie, you're in a little bit of an unlucky position being a ranger, right?
Well, not that I raid anyway. So, I mean, I'm kind of like talking about stuff that it doesn't affect me anymore.
Right, but it's a less desirable class.
It's a totally undesirable class.
I'm saying less to give you some glimmer of hope here.
There's no glimmer.
Okay, all righty. Because you don't have buffs or you don't contribute beyond your DPS.
No, that's my guild tag, as a matter of fact. I got nothing.
Okay, fair enough. So, but evening it out, all scouts are treated the same in terms of loot.
Yeah.
It's when you get down to your specific pattern and it's unique for you. But there are some scout classes that are more desirable than others because they can potentially contribute more than just DPS.
Right. But here, let me put this to you this way, this whole smart loot thing, okay? You have a disadvantage. Say you have 6-8 healers. I don't know how many healers anyone runs with anymore. 6-5?
Somewhere between 5-8. I would say those are the general numbers. 5, you're pretty tight on some fights.
So you have a lower chance of getting loot. What you do have going for you, Dell, you have a way better chance of getting a spot on the raid to begin with.
Absolutely, I agree. I'm a highly desirable class, but I'm also a class that is there's a lot of need for.
So you have to share more of your toys.
Yes, I do.
With the other healers.
Yes. And for, not to be too specific, but in a case where you have a bidding or DKP-like system, there's a lot more competition for our green drops than are for the red.
Yes, I'm very familiar with a lot more competition. When my guild was running with a ton of scouts, it was a bidding war. It was a bidding war all the time, and I always went all in on everything. And I, as a consequence, ended up with much less DKP.
And I think where that comes back to haunt us highly desirable archetypes is that when a item that drops that is universal across all classes, like a mount, for example, the classes that have less competition will tend to have more stockpiled currency for that.
Yeah.
That they can get it. Not to say they're guaranteed to get it, but they have a greater chance because usually there's only 2 or 3 of them bidding maybe on an item.
Yeah.
Whereas in, say, the healers, you're talking 5 to 8 or 10 people bidding on it. So prices are going to go up higher because there's more demand. So we'll have less, quote unquote, currency. And I'm referring to maybe like whatever your DKP or point system for that sort of thing is than those classes where there are a fewer amount of.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think you're going to end up, in the end, you're never going to have balance, I guess, is what I'm getting to. I don't think it's possible to have everything be equal for everybody. Life's not fair. EQ2 is not fair.
That is true.
It's just reality.
I just coming back to loot, like you said, though, I don't necessarily need it to be genius, but I just don't want it to be dumb.
Exactly. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm still on the fence because I kind of like the old days of the surprise that comes out of the chest. I kind of like the old days of not knowing. But, you know, we're talking about raiding and it's you spend so many weeks and weeks and weeks working on a mob. You finally get the thing down. The last thing you want is some piece of junk that nobody wants.
Right.
I get that. That part I get. If it's the end mob in the zone, that's when I think it burns the worst. Because you have to kill those other mobs over and over and over again just to even get a shot at the last guy anyway. So that maybe is the worst burn. The further in you get, the smarter you want the loot to be. But the downside of that is being done more quickly.
Sure, but let's put it in this context where maybe more players have access to it, the public quests.
Okay.
The Fable drops from public quests are randomed.
Well, yes.
So is it fair? And it's like you said, life's
not a smaller percentage.
That's true, but life's not fair for one guy who has gone through 20 public quests and still not had his gotten his breastplate, and somebody else who's done the same 20 and gotten 3 breastplates because he's luckier. You know, whatever that might be.
Well, it's a percentage, okay? And I really don't like everything being easily accessible. I like the fact that there are exciting things in the game periodically. I'm thinking back to TSO. There were some exciting pieces in the game. Not as many as there used to be before, but there's some exciting pieces in the game. And the trade-off is that it's harder to get. Harder to get and or less likely to get. To me, that's a good trade-off. Because if it's too easily accessible, why would anyone bother with anything less?
That is true. There needs to be some form of earned credit that you've worked for this to have it. I absolutely agree with that. But participating in PQs, you just got to show up and do a little bit of work.
But see, Del, if you put the breastplate in every single drop, if you make it smart loot, people will stop going. Once they get what they want, why would you bother going back except to get a shard and do it once a day and that's it?
Right, but how many posts or discussions have we seen of, I've done it, and I'm being some Joe Schmo. Joe Schmo has done it many, many times, and I still don't have my breastplate, and my buddy showed up once and got it. It's not fair.
It's random. It's random. It's random. Roll a dice. See how many times a 6 comes up.
But how?
Go to Vegas.
How long will it take for players to become upset with that, yeah. It's not fair mentality. And
yeah, people get upset about everything, though. It doesn't matter what you do. You're going to have somebody QQing on the forums.
Oh, absolutely. I agree there. Hey, I'm QQing on every podcast about something, right? But that's your question early on. You don't want to see things that alienate players so they leave. Well, treadmilling, even though it's unfair and life's not fair, causes that starts happening, and then they start, well, you know what? I don't want to play this anymore because it's not fun because I'm not getting rewarded.
I mean, I could say the same thing. I have spent hours on end, days on end, weeks on end farming shinies in the Desert of Flame zones, and I still have no preserved arm wrapping. What is up with that? Where's my preserved arm wrapping? QQ, and my neighbor over here went in one time and got it.
And I'm all for smart shinies, too.
No.
I'm only for smart shinies for the ones that I'm missing.
Everybody
else should have randoms.
If it were up to you, everybody would be done with the game in the first month of play.
No, I would be done with the game. Everybody else would still be waiting for things to be random. That's the Delmon way. That's back when we had placeholders. It should be there when I get up.
You're making me angry now.
Oh, no, we don't like Angry Allie. She's not Angry Allie is not funny, and we need to be funny. So maybe we should just wrap up this discussion before we both go Hulk mode on it.
I think you're right.
I think there's a spectrum. I don't want genius, but I don't want dumb. Maybe there is some form of happy median in there that we could find.
Yeah, I think there has to be happy medium. And I would like to put the call out to anybody who has an opinion about this, especially if you agree with me.
And not with Dell.
Please feel free to write to us and tell us your opinions.
All right, so let's talk about the Allie angle this week.
All righty.
And we have a little bit of a question for you, a little Father's Day themed question, because it is Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, Pops. We'll be seeing you later at the Cheesecake Factory. where we're taking our dad.
Oh, really?
Yes, cheesecake. Yes, he loves cheesecake, so that's where we go. But that has nothing to do with the Allie angle, but other than the theme of the question. So, Allie, your question this week is, being as it is Father's Day today, what are three life lessons that Papa Allie taught you that you can apply to gameplay in EverQuest 2?
Well, I actually have a fourth that I thought of while we were recording.
Okay.
You sort of hinted at it a little bit. It's better to be lucky than good, but I decided not to include that one.
Alrighty.
Namely, because I couldn't remember it.
That's our honorable mention one.
Yes. So my number three is actually a lesson learned from my dad, sort of sideways from my daughter. And here it is. Grandpas aren't supposed to say mean things to children. So this one time, apparently my dad called my daughter when she was about four, said, "Don't be such a panty waste." And her comeback was, "Grandpas aren't supposed to say mean things to children." So that expression has actually had quite a long life at the dinner table. And how I can apply this in game terms basically is the sort of life lesson of just don't be a jerk to people and you'll go a lot farther. Be nice.
That is certainly one to grow on, because you are right. You gather more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. That's very true.
Yes, even if you don't want flies.
I don't know what that saying means, but okay. Number two.
Number two, life's too short to drink bad wine. And applied to EQ2, this can actually apply in a whole bunch of different ways. But basically, one example is life's too short to be in a bad group. If you're not having fun, just bail. Just excuse yourself. Just say something came up. You need to go. Most of the time that works. If you're not enjoying yourself, whatever it is, just stop doing it.
I absolutely agree. I think I've said it several times here before. EQ2 is a game. It's meant to be fun. You know, if you're not having fun, do something else. Absolutely. I thought, though, this was about increasing alcohol tolerance and getting the achievement, but okay.
Well, it's actually like Ukubi said, the same thing. It's the same thing. Life's too short to drink bad wine. Life's too short to be bored in Destiny of Velias. Go back and do Farad for a while.
Absolutely. So what is your number one thing for EverQuest 2 that you learned from your dad?
This one is not verbatim, but I think you can gather the original wording. Wish in one hand, poop in the other, and see which one gets full the fastest. And this is actually a life lesson that works in many, many areas. So for EQ2, basically, the lesson is you can't just sit around and wish for something to happen. You can't just sit around and wish for a group. Put yourself out there and ask people to group. Start a group on your own. You be the leader. Find yourself a tank. Find yourself a healer. You can't just sit around wishing that you had raid gear. Go out there and make it happen. Find a way to raid. Maybe there's some pickup going on. Maybe there's an alliance you can form up with. Meet people, etc. Nothing's going to fall in your lap, basically.
That is so true. And that is a awesome one. Because how often have we heard people say, "I can never find a group. I can never get in a group." But you know they're not out there saying that they're either LFG or they're willing to start the group. They just want to reap the benefits without any of the work. And I think that's true. If you want a group, if you wanted these things in game, you have to work at them. You have to camp the mobs, do the research, look things up on Alakazam or on the wiki to figure them out. Don't expect everything's going to be handed to you for free just because you signed on. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think a lot of reasons why people don't start groups, at least for myself, is not so much not being willing to put in the work as not feeling confident in their ability to lead or not feeling confident in their ability to know what to do with the people that you have. So, you know, worrying about looking like an idiot, basically. I would say don't worry, because everybody was an idiot at one point.
Or still is.
Well, yes, there's that. But just hope that you get a bunch of idiots and then you'll look like a genius.
Right. And I think, you know, you're exactly right with that, because I have the same trepidation at times too. When you're the group putter together, group leader, there is, I guess, at least for me, and maybe other people think this way, or maybe I'm the only one who thinks this way, that the leader knows what they're doing.
And the leader has all the answers and is the one who is deciding everything.
Right. They're going to know all the strats. So when somebody's in the group and says, hey, I've never done this encounter, the inherent rule is the leader is the one who speaks up and tells them what to do. I'll be honest, sometimes I don't know all the strats. Sometimes I'm the healer, and all I know is I just keep healing and keep people alive. I don't know that you're supposed to joust. I'm already standing at max range, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's a surefire way to get your group killed if you don't know the strats. But I think people have this assumption that the leader has all their stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
And is going to be able to provide all the right answers. Here's where we zone in. This is how long it will take. This is the mob. By the way, he AEs on this. Cure this curse. Don't cure that. That's what, and, you know, sometimes we don't have all that information. So we're hesitant to put ourselves out there in fear that we're going to get called out on not knowing all this stuff.
And end up on some bad player list.
Yeah, I have to say, I've always thought those were the worst things ever invented in EQ2. The bad player list that we see on forums and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you're having an off day, you know, or something like that. And you're forever branded a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
Or you answered the question the wrong way in level chat. Now everybody's all over your case. Yeah,
but I think that the ranking is based on how many votes you get. And if you have 3,000 votes for being a bad player, maybe you are a bad player.
I wonder how much of those are legit votes, because I haven't encountered 3,000 people in game, so my 3,000 bad votes, I don't know where they all came from.
Do you have 3,000 bad votes?
I think people are stuffing ballot boxes on me.
Wow, I'm going to have to look for Delmon on the list. Oh, I should look for myself, I suppose. Nobody could possibly know me, though, because I'm busy hiding on alts or in my guild hall.
And don't worry, you're alphabetically at the beginning of the list, because they always start with the A's.
That's all right. I don't pug anyway, so I'm safe.
All right, so just to review your top three things that you learned from your dad that you've been able to apply to EverQuest 2 gameplay. Number three was?
Grandpas aren't supposed to say mean things to children.
Number two?
Life's too short to drink bad wine.
And the most important thing you ever learned from your dad that you use in EQ2?
Wish in one hand, poop in the other, and see which one gets full the fastest.
I gotta say, your dad's a wise man.
He is a very wise man. That last one was actually handed down from my grandfather. He's got a lot of cute isms, my dad. It's raining harder than a cow peeing on a flat rock.
We got to get him on the show. He sounds like he's funny. All right, so is there anything else for this episode number 26, the Father's Day edition of EQ2 Talk?
I think that pretty much wraps it up.
Okay, good. So if folks want to get in touch with us, how can they do so?
Oh, they can do all kinds of things. They can email us.
So for me, that's Delmon at EQ2Talk.com.
And I'm Allie at EQ2Talk.com.
And they can also join us in our in-game chat channel by typing /join EQ2.unrest.EQ2Talk.
Or you can talk to us in-game, send us mail. We are at EQ2.unrest.alicious, A-L-I-S-C-I-O-U-S.
And for me, it's eq2.unrest.delmon, D-E-L-L-M-O-N, as in Nancy.
And you can check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/eq2talk.
And if you want to follow us over on the Twitter, you can catch us there as well. So that's twitter.com/eq2talk as well. And guess what I forgot to do?
What did you forget, Al?
I forgot to thank this week's corporate sponsor.
Oh, you sure did.
Slinky. Made by the Poof Slinky Company. It's fun for a girl and a boy over 60 years. It's Slinky, Allie.
It's a wonderful, wonderful toy.
So hope everyone enjoyed episode 26. We hope to see you all back here in episode number 27. And say goodnight, Allie.
Good night, Allie. I'm a bad co-host.
I thought you were yelling at me for doing what I always do that I'm not supposed to do.
I need to unplug again.
Okay.
You certainly are trying, Del. You're trying my nerves.
It's Slinky. It's Slinky. For fun, it's a wonderful toy. When it walks downstairs, a loner in pairs, and makes a slinkity sound. A spring, a marvelous thing. Everyone knows it's Slinky. It's Slinky. It's Slinky. For fun, it's a wonderful toy. It's fun for a girl and a boy. It's fun for a girl and a boy.
Get a Slinky in a size and color you like in metal or plastic.